This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What do annexation, short-term rentals, revenue caps, texting while driving, what do all these issues have in common? Well, they're all examples of the ongoing tug-of-war between the state of Texas and counties and cities in Texas. The battle over state versus local control was a common theme in the latest legislative session, and it's coming up in this special session. Lawmakers have been working to create statewide rules on various issues which sometimes undercut existing ordinances made by local governments. Are these issues that the cities have, should they be able to decide them for themselves? What does the city have? Does the state have an obligation to protect constituents from cities, as some legislators have argued? What other policies or could be caught up in this power struggle? How will this saga play out when lawmakers convene for the special session in July? Give us a call. What do you think? Should the state should be able to decide what should happen to San Antonio's tree ordinance? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. With me in the studio to discuss this issue, we've got Bennett Sandlin. He's the executive director of the Texas Municipal League. Al Kaufman is a professor at St. Mary's School of Law and a former civil rights litigator. And with me on the line is Brian Matthew. He is a policy analyst for the Center for Local Governance at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Bennett Sandlin over at the Texas Municipal League. You are pretty much handling the voice of all the cities as they come together to discuss. What do cities feel about this?
It's alarming to see local control no longer be something that's respected at the Capitol. Citizens elect their mayors and their councils to enact these local ordinances, and then to have bigger level of government try to take away that authority is something new and quite alarming to almost all the mayors that are part of our association.
So Al Kaufman, professor at St. Mary's School of Law, let's talk about the law on this. We know that cities and counties derive their authority from the state. The states are the initial founding building block of government in the United States. We had 13 colonies. They came together to form the original federal government. You know, this is where the power is. It's in the state, right?
Well, the Constitution of the state of Texas actually gives some powers to municipalities. But in addition, the arguments have been made by the state that decisions should be made at the local level. The state is always used a defense in litigation that local control is extremely important, has to be respected. They defended segregation by school districts because of local control. They defended disparities in school finance because of local control. So although the state's certainly important in the constitutional system, as is the federal government, when it got down to the state levels, they created the power to create and control city governments, but they did that always with respect of local populations.
So to continue with that, what you're saying, but sometimes the states argued yes and sometimes they argued no in regards to local control, but can it be parsed in different ways? There's local control, which is good, and local control, which is not good, and that sometimes the state should have the authority to decide what is best for, you know, from so that we don't have a patchwork of laws across the state.
Think in many areas that's true. I think Mr. Sandlin would just talking about the banking system, I think that does have to be done statewide. But when it comes to issues that are before us now about trees and local enforcement of immigration laws and ride hailing systems, those seem to be matters that should be controlled locally. The whole theory of local control was that decisions are best made by the people most directly affected by them, who most directly elect the mayors and city council members, and that they should have control over these issues. Now, I'm sure that there's some issues that should be done statewide. I don't doubt that. But I do think the state is tremendously exaggerated its power and overused its power to control the cities in many areas.
So Bennett Sandlin, executive director of the Texas Municipal League, do you think that really what we're arguing about is that cities have become more progressive in some of their policies? They want to adopt things like plastic bag bans. They want to protect trees. They want to adopt laws that maybe conservative lawmakers who are elected mainly from rural areas across the state may not agree with. And so this is really an overreach to impose conservative policies on liberal cities.
I don't think it has to be a conservative versus liberal issue. A good example is the very conservative West Texas city of Fort Stockton, one of only eight cities that have banned plastic bags. They did that because the plastic bags were floating into the cattle feeders and choking the cattle. So you've got a very conservative, small, rural town that has a very good local geographic reason to ban bags. If we did away with that and let the state preempt those cities, what are those folks going to say to ranchers in West Texas who have their cattle dying? That's precisely why we have differences at the local level. We don't need a bag ban in some cities. We need it in others. That's a good thing, not a bad thing.
But there are other issues, like there is a ban on cities being able to raise the minimum wage in Texas. That can only be done at the state level. In other parts of the country, there are cities like San Francisco, which has a higher minimum wage than there is across the state of California. So is that an example of the state imposing a conservative policy, their anti-higher minimum wage, against a progressive city which may try to have a higher living wage for its citizens?
I agree with the professor. There's probably areas that are best governed at the state level, certain labor issues. You can't have different labor laws in 1,200 different cities. So it's not that every issue is perfectly decided at the local level. It's just things that have to do with local geography and the way land is set out are things that we should leave to the local level. Trees, ride sharing, those are all different. San Antonio is different than Austin. Austin's different than Fort Stockton.
Okay, and we now have Brian Matthews, is that correct?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. Great to have you here, and this gets you up to speed on our conversation. So where are you on regards to local government versus state control? I mean, where do you side on that?
Sure, and I think to articulate our position with some coherence, let me back up and sort of talk about our broader worldview, and that will, I think, put some framework for understanding the place of local control within that worldview. Under the Foundation's understanding, the end of government is to preserve, secure, and advance liberty. And in the course of that, there may be valid governmental actions. But also in the course of that, we understand and are zealous for limits on government. And we've always understood, as the framers of the U.S. Constitution have understood, as the framers of the Texas Constitution have understood, that governments are not self-limiting. And so we've set up this interlocking system where states have banded together to set up the federal government, and they've also created cities. And part of that is gifting to certain cities the rights of home rule, basically local control. But local control under this context is a tool, again, ordered toward the end of preserving, securing, and advancing liberty. And to the extent that cities step outside the valid zones of their authority, the state government, whether it's through the legislature, whether it's through the judicial branch, have a valid role in stepping in to beat back those actions.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Our number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about local control, city control versus the state. And where do you find that where the authority should be? Do you think states, the state of Texas, should be able to clamp down on cities and many of the ordinances that they've put forth? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the upcoming special session of the legislature, they will be taking up a statewide tree ordinance, which may not be what San Antonio would like to have for a tree ordinance. The state would be more interested in trying to protect the rights of the property owner, whereas San Antonio would be more interested in trying to protect its collective tree canopy for air control and for other environmental reasons. So where does the authority, where does it side? You know, so we're talking about that and other issues as we talk about state control versus local control. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're getting some callers, so let's get Helen on the air. And Helen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
My concern was for the fracking. Some cities made, up north, and they tore that down. And I'm worried about San Antonio because I've seen Halliburton workers on the south side at an HEB shopping. That fracking is close to San Antonio, and I'm afraid sooner or later stuff is going to get into the Wilcox aquifer or the Edwards aquifer, and nothing in the world will be able to clean it up.
All right, Helen, thank you for that. It's a good call. I appreciate you bringing up that point. So Denton and their fracking ban, that was a ban that was put in place through a voter initiative. And so, Brian Matthew, when you talk about liberty and who has the control of who's pursuing liberty, isn't the ultimate voice should be popular sovereignty, that people's speaking out?
Well, the ultimate control is the individual's liberty is what we would say. And in the course of that, yes, there are democracies and democratic rights, but there are also multiple competing levels of government to ensure that one set of that there is not a tyranny of the majority. And so we have different sets of majorities that check one another in order toward different ends. So, for example, to take the fracking ban, you know, there may have been a majority of citizens within the city of Denton who felt that fracking was something that should be impermissible. But the state came in and sort of in its judgment said, no, we think that fracking is something that when we look at the costs and benefits, benefits the state of Texas. And that is a valid role for the state to play.
Okay, well, the state plays that role, but for the people of Denton, they feel like if they had to live next door to a fracking operation, that that individual's liberty is going to be curtailed, right?
Sure.
And so that person's liberty, because they don't have a loud voice in the Capitol, they don't have as much rights?
Well, this is why you need to have competing levels of government. There are rights through the courts, there are rights through the state legislature, and there are rights at the city. And we are in constant conversation here. Sometimes property owners may feel that having a fracking factory right next to them will contaminate the water supply, for example, as the caller was concerned about. But the state has an obligation to investigate those claims, to look into the evidence, and in its judgment, weigh the different interests, including the interest of giving cities a certain level of autonomy in order to come down on a judgment. And in that case, the state came down and decided that fracking bans should be impermissible in order to advance larger interests of the state.
See, I think that is exactly the tyranny of the majority. Mr. Matthew was talking about the tyranny of the majority. Well, that means that the state majority controlled what the city of Denton wanted to do, or what this particular caller would like to do in San Antonio to protect our water. As you know, if something happens to the Edwards underground aquifers, San Antonio will suffer immeasurably and forever. So that seems to me an issue that truly should be done locally. And if we don't like what the city council does, we can vote them out if they put in a ban like that, or if they want to preserve trees and we don't like that, we can throw them out. But that's a local decision very closely. I just want to address one more point that was brought up about liberty. Liberty is very important. It's in the Constitution. I strongly believe in liberty. But the liberty concepts have been misused for many years. Back in the early 1900s, the Supreme Court threw out minimum wage laws, threw out child labor laws, threw out organizing laws because they interfere with individuals' liberty to work under terrible conditions. And so that can be terribly misused.
Which it frequently is, because we have to weigh whose liberty at each instance. It's a case-by-case basis. But I want to get back to Bennett Sandlin and this fracking ban in Denton. I know you worked on that quite a bit.
Well, it was a bad bill. The state government decided that fracking is appropriate in residential neighborhoods in city-by-city basis. And the professor's correct. How could the state government possibly have the resources to decide what's appropriate in downtown San Antonio or suburban Denton? I think I have a liberty right to be free from an oil well 40 feet outside my bedroom window. There's no liberty to do absolutely anything on any plot of land. If you take the gentleman's argument to an extreme, could you tear down a residential house and put up a liquor store or a strip club in a residential neighborhood? That would be ultimate liberty, but it would be chaos, and that's not what neighborhoods and cities are about. We're about protecting the liberty interests of those neighbors and their property values.
Don't we decide when we move into a city that we are going to be giving up a certain amount of our liberty in order that we're going to be able to function in congruence with other individuals, so that my next door neighbor suddenly can't put in a pig farm in his backyard? I have to realize that we have rules and ordinances, and so there's a sacrifice of liberty in order for me to live in a city. Al Kaufman.
Well, I agree with that. And, of course, if your neighbor can put up a pig farm, then so could you. And you can't do it, so you've lost some of your liberty, as you say. But I do think that often that the local governments are best attuned to that. I bring up the immigration issue, the sanctuary cities issue. I think if cities decide that they have a limited resource to spend on the police and they want to spend more money on burglaries and robberies than on enforcing immigration law, that really should be a local matter. And the local police force and the local city council should be able to do that.
All right. So, Brian Matthew, weigh in, please.
Sure. Well, I don't want to speak necessarily on the sanctuary cities issue or immigration because our foundation has not come out with a position on either of those issues. But I think there's sort of this idea that local governments are best placed to balance out liberty interests. But part of the problem with that is that cities can often, not just cities, all governments can be captured by certain interests. And in that capture, they can promulgate rules or regulations that hurt other people's liberty interests. And so that's why you need to have competing levels of government. For example, let's talk about land use restrictions and zoning. We have a colleague at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, Chuck DeVore, who has shown a high statistical correlation between strong property rights and the ability for families to build wealth over time, low-income families, housing affordability. What happens often is that people move into a city and then incumbent homeowners exercising their political rights legitimately, exercising their voice, set in place restrictive zoning regimes that keep out lower-income, often minority residents. So, for example, or that over time make it very difficult for them to build wealth and to stay in the city. So, for example, you can look at the St. John's area in Austin, Texas, where you have seen black flight from the area as restrictive zoning has hurt their ability to build by right, and instead they've had to relocate in different parts of the greater Austin area. That lengthens commutes, and that makes it more difficult for them to build wealth over time. So these are kind of the problems you face when you make local governments ultimate. I'm not saying that local governments don't have a legitimate role to play, to have locally adapted, tailored rules that work for them. I'm just saying that the state government has a vital role to play in oversight, whether that is through the courts or whether that is through the legislature.
Okay, back to the phones. Matt. And Matt, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm on the city council of the city of Wingcrest, and we have been paying close attention to the legislature this session as they sought to take away our right to potentially regulate chicken. And this goes to show that it's not just the big issues that are in the national political scene, like fracking or sanctuary cities, but unfortunately, it may just be the tip of the iceberg. There was Senate Bill 1620 that was passed unanimously by the Senate and by the House Committee, didn't go up for a final vote, thankfully, that would have restricted our ability to limit people who wanted to have hens in their backyard. This was a conversation that we'd had in our city of Wingcrest over a year and a half. There was a lot of involvement from people at the local level, neighborhood associations, residents, all voiced their opinions, and we came up with a decision that was good for us for right now in our city. And there are no broader economic interests that would have been implicated by the state coming in and now saying, we're not allowed to regulate that. So I'm concerned that again, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and that as legislators get more comfortable intervening and telling cities how they need to act, that we're going to have some real problems down the road for issues that are not the big ones in the political scene.
So, Matt, what did y'all decide? What's your chicken ordinance?
We kept in place the longstanding practice that we can't have backyard hens in the city of Wingcrest. And we may decide to change that someday. There were a lot of good arguments on both sides, but our community right now wasn't wanting that to happen, and I'm glad that Austin didn't intervene to change our...
So no backyard chickens in Wingcrest, right?
No.
Okay, right. Matt, thank you for that. Appreciate that. And so let me go, Brian Matthew, why does the state have an interest on whether or not there should be backyard chickens in Wingcrest?
Yeah, I don't want to be put into the position of saying that every state intervention in local affairs is justified. And to be honest, I'm not super familiar with this specific issue and the proposed preemption. But what I will say is that the way we approach these issues is really the rationale that was articulated in the Texas Supreme Court opinion in Patel, authored by Justice Don Willett, where basically any governmental action has to be that impedes on people's liberties has to be justified by a rational interest backed by evidence. And so if the city is able to show that its, you know, ordinance regarding chickens was backed by compelling evidence that justifiably impedes on people's rights to do with their property as they will, then maybe that, maybe that is permissible. Again, I'm not sure what the state interest necessarily was in preemption, so I'd have to look into that. I may agree with the state, I may disagree. We're not here to just blanket oppose city policies. What we're here to do is to push back on those areas where the city is stepping outside the zone of its authority. And really, that Patel decision provides kind of a lodestar in helping us make those determinations.
Al Kaufman.
Well, I've studied that decision, and it's going back to the law of the 1930s. In fact, the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court said that the court had gone much too far in recognizing these liberty interests. It involved people who deal with eyebrows, and there was a requirement from a state agency saying that if you're involved in this, you have to have a certain amount of training, and the Supreme Court felt that that was too much training. But that liberty interest can be so misused by the state. And in that case, they might have found the eyebrow regulations unconstitutional, but they came up with a whole new theory of the importance of liberty, and it was just basically a political statement in the decision. And the same justices who upheld the liberty of the eyebrow pluckers didn't care about the liberty of students in the school finance case. They said that these are state matters, and they have to be controlled by the state, and the state should be given discretion. So it's the inconsistency at all levels that really does concern me.
Inconsistency, is that seems to be the word of the day, Bennett Sandlin?
You know, that's the whole point of having 1,215 different cities. You can vote with your feet and live in the kind of community you want. I really sympathize with that council member from Windcrest. They decided it wasn't appropriate to have chicken pens. I live in Austin, where we're all kind of hippies, and chickens are now all the rage, and everybody's got a chicken pen in their backyard. Isn't that wonderful that you can decide to live in one city where you can have a chicken pen? You can decide to live in a city that thinks they're obnoxious. That's great, and I think that's what makes the patchwork quilt a good thing rather than a bad thing.
And so we're going to go to, let me give you one last crack at this, Brian Matthew, about, you know, liberty as Al Kaufman described it.
Sure. I mean, I think there's this charge again and again that we're being somehow hypocritical or inconsistent, as Professor Kaufman said. But again, within our worldview, these things are not inconsistent at all. They're totally consistent. The end of all governments is to preserve liberty. Are there going to be raucous political debates on how exactly we're going to determine what is a valid liberty interest, what is not, when it's appropriate to infringe on people's liberties? Absolutely. That's politics. That's the system that we are in. But in order to best preserve people's liberties, we have these multiple competing layers of government in order to check one another. And that's really what we're talking about today.
Yeah, but we're not talking about governments, competing levels of government that all have the same weighted about authority. We're going to come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Al Kaufman, professor of St. Mary's School of Law, had to leave, but we still have with us Brian Matthew, chief, the policy analyst at the Center for Local Governance at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and Bennett Sandlin. He's the executive director of the Texas Municipal League. And we're talking about state versus local control. We got a few calls here about the tree ordinance. We're going to try and get them in here now. DJ, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And turn off your radio. Turn it down.
Local control. We got a few calls here about the tree ordinance.
All right. DJ, you there? Okay, let's move on to Tom. Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, this idea of liberty being, personal liberty being the main reason is, I don't know, a pointless argument. The preamble of the Constitution says, besides
securing liberty for our posterity, we also provide for the common welfare. Now, it seems to me that personal liberty is best determined by people in the locales where they live, because they understand what the conditions are. What this is a use of liberty mostly to provide benefits for corporations, particularly in terms of local ordinances. In the city where I live in, we have a lot of outside real estate interests that are running amok and destroying our local neighborhoods. I have an economic interest in having a say in trees on my property. Actually, having trees increases my own personal property value, and as not only on my property, but in the neighborhood I live in as well. And the fact of the matter is that we're affected by each other in a neighborhood.
Okay, thank you for that call, Tom. And so let me get the response from Brian Matthew. Corporations, do they have a louder voice when it comes to liberty because they're able to hire lobbyists, teams of lobbyists up in Austin, whereas someone who appreciates trees may not be able to?
Well, in answering that question, let me get back to the closing comment before the at the end of the last segment about multiple competing layers of government, because you were sort of alluding to the fact that our position sort of shows the state as having pride of place. And again, that's not an inconsistent position. When you look at our U.S. constitutional federal structure, and when you look at the way the state and the cities are set up, you see that the state is the primary unit of government. The states banded together to form the federal government and did cede certain powers to the federal government that are listed, that are enumerated in the United States Constitution. But when the federal government acts outside of those enumerated rights, the state has an interest in protecting its own rights. In the same way, the state institutes and creates cities in the state. There's a venerable, there's a long list of case law that establishes that. Cities are creatures of the state, and the state has a valid role for oversight for when cities step outside of their bounds. So turning directly to the gentleman's comments on the tree ordinance, our position is that trees are real property owned by the landowner. If trees do provide certain values, it is often alleged that they provide certain communal benefits. But communal benefits are not things that we tend to recognize as property rights. Our position is basically that when something is private property, it's unjust for the government to coerce a private actor to provide a social benefit without compensation. That's Article 1, Section 17 of the Texas Constitution. So if public benefits are being provided by trees on private property, then the public should pay for those benefits. And I think that's an entirely consistent position that doesn't owe much, if anything, to corporations.
Bennett Sandlin, you want to comment on about how cities and their relationship with the state?
I find the comment interesting that while I agree that states created the federal government, I find it very odd to hear that states created cities. I think the city of San Antonio and the city of Nacogdoches and dozens of others would be quite surprised to hear that. They predated the state of Texas. In fact, they were here before the Republic of Texas, and they existed to do the very things we're talking about, health and safety ordinances, regulating sewage, regulating all the things that we have, the problems that we have in dense urban environments. So I don't buy the argument that the state is supreme in anything but perhaps an ultimate legal sense. I think local government is probably the best level of government and therefore shouldn't be subservient to anybody else as a practical matter.
Let's go to Aaron on the line. Aaron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the irony that Greg Abbott and Ken Paxton and their cronies have sued the federal government 49 times for overreach, and then they proceed to try and strip cities of their rights. So I think it just goes to an inconsistency. I think the only consistency is their desire for power and to make bad decisions.
Aaron, thank you for the call. So, Brian Matthew, is there inconsistency there?
Again, these are always going to be political debates. I don't think these are necessarily inconsistent, though. I think that's inaccurate to say. They're entirely consistent if you buy into the worldview that states are the primary units of government, which have delegated certain enumerated rights to the federal government and have instituted cities and gifted home rule to certain cities. But in creating those cities, still maintain a valid role of oversight. So it's not inconsistent. You may disagree with that worldview, but it's not inconsistent.
Why does the state have an interest? You talked about the taking of the as a way of looking at it, that the trees are private or property, and is of an asset that belongs to a property owner. And if it's providing a communal benefit, then the community should somehow pay for that. But you're saying that the state has a vested interest in trying to protect the homeowner if he wants, or the property owner, if that person wants to clear cut acres and acres of trees without doing any sort of compensation or recognizing that that's going to impact the overall air quality or quality of life for a community. That's not a responsibility that anyone has.
So the state's interest is to protect people's property rights in that situation. When there are communal benefits such as air quality or flooding impacts or reducing stormwater runoff, and the community wants to mandate that trees cannot be removed or trimmed or taken off from the property, then the community has to compensate the private landowner for that taking. The Texas Supreme Court, in a decision, and I'm afraid the name of that decision is escaping me, has found that even something as small as mandating the presence of a small cable box on a property is a taking. So, you know, the presence of trees, these are real property. The property rights, ownership of the natural resources contained within private property has run back to even John Locke, who said, as much land as a man tills, plants, improves, cultivates, and can use the product of, so much is his property. So this is not about the state protecting, quote-unquote, the right of people to just plant down any tree. This is the state protecting the right of a landowner to remove timber on his own property.
Okay, another caller, Elisa. Elisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I used to live in San Antonio and have since moved to North Texas. And one of the first things that we noticed is the lack of trees. When people construct here, the first thing they do is clear the land of all the trees. And I really fear that if this were to go through, that San Antonio would be no different than here. We miss it just for that reason. And I just want to know, I guess, if that would be an issue.
All right, Elisa, thank you for the call. Let me ask Bennett about that. Bennett Sandlin, over the executive director for the Texas Municipal League. Does it vary from cities to cities about how they see trees?
Absolutely. There's only about 50 to 60 cities that have tree ordinances of some way, shape, or form. There's cities that literally don't have trees. You could go out to West Texas and trees aren't an issue. In more dense urban areas, trees are an asset. And the gentleman that called in earlier had it right. It's basically a developer issue. Developers don't like to drive their bulldozers around large heritage trees. They like to clear cut. This happened out near Burney a few years ago. There's a wonderful photograph, you can Google it, of an entire beautiful hilltop out just west of San Antonio that was completely topped, clear cut, to build a suburban neighborhood. That is contrary to the values of Burney and suburban San Antonio. So there's two sides to this. And the extension of Mr. Matthews' argument is, isn't it the logical extension that you could do coal mining on a quarter acre neighborhood plot, otherwise the city has to reimburse you? Well, that's kind of absurd. When you live in a dense urban area, as you pointed out, you give up some fundamental right to do coal mining or pig farming, and your property values are actually protected by these restrictions, not harmed.
Right, but he's saying that because that property owner is not able to bulldoze that tree, then somehow he is enduring extra cost, and maybe he should be able to be compensated for that.
Well, I think he's gaining cost by having beautiful trees on his property. It upholds his property value, so it doesn't really protect his economic value either.
Are you surprised that San Antonio cares about trees so much?
I don't know the local areas well. I'm from Austin, but I'm not surprised at all. There's 50 to 60 cities that feel similar to what San Antonio does. And I'm looking out your window right now, and it is a beautiful tree canopy, and not every city has that.
Brian Matthew, are you surprised that San Antonio cares about trees so much?
Not really. Cities can care about different things. Our position is just pretty simple. It's unjust for the government to coerce a private actor to provide a social benefit without compensation. So whether that government is the state government coercing private actors, whether that government is local governments coercing private actors like the city of San Antonio, that's unjust and it should be stopped.
Well, we'll see what happens in the upcoming special session in July. That's going to be one of the issues on the call. Other issues that will challenge the city's inability to regulate themselves is also on the call. Some people have called this special session the state versus cities special session. We'll get into that when we come back from the break. The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is the Source on Texas Public Radio. Sanctuary cities, plastic bag bans, transgender bathroom policies, tree protection, ride-sharing ordinances. These are just a few of the areas where the state of Texas and some of the cities across the state are sort of at loggerheads. The state says now it knows best and forget local control. Cities say their citizens have a voice and that should be heard. We're talking about local control, cities, counties versus the state. And what does that mean for your quality of life? In the upcoming special session, the tree ordinance will be coming back. Also, there will be the cap on cities' revenue, on tax revenue. That's also an issue that's of special concern. What do you think? Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Call in like Barbara did. And hey, Barbara, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Oh, great. Go ahead.
Good. Okay. One of the things I wanted to say is that, first of all, I think Brian Matthews is being intentionally obtuse when we're talking about trees and the benefit to the community, because the trees are a vital resource for clean air, clean water, and more than just the rights of a landowner, owner, or a development. It's a community benefit, and I don't really think that many people in San Antonio or in Texas are short-sighted to believe otherwise. And the idea that Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Patrick could make decisions for cities within Texas when the decisions that they're making for the state of Texas are so damaging and regressive, with their position on spending all this time and energy on the bathroom bill, when there are children who do not have adequate health care, education, a foster care system in collapse. His priority was to reduce the cost of a concealed handgun license. Okay. And just the whole idea is just absolutely terrible.
All right, Barbara, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. So, Brian Matthew, I do not consider you being obtuse. I see you as representing a legitimate point of view. And so do you want to respond?
Well, maybe I am obtuse. I don't know. Just to respond, there is this idea percolating that there are community benefits provided by trees. I am not someone who hates trees. I think trees are great. They do provide so many different benefits. But the question is, who owns the tree? That's the question that maybe I obtusely am focusing on. The community does not own the tree. The landowner owns the tree. And the landowner should have the right to remove or trim the tree without complying with these onerous regulations. If there are community benefits being provided by the tree on the landowner's property that the community wants to, and therefore the community wants to protect the tree, prevent its trimming or removal, the community should compensate the landowner.
So you're saying that there is no legal argument to say that the trees are part of the commons like we have with the air and with water?
That's right. I'm saying that trees are real property owned by the landowner.
So, but in law, there is no finding that trees are, when we talk about the commons, you know, I can't suddenly start burning all sorts of horrible things in my backyard because I'm going to be polluting the air in my neighborhood and across the city. So we say, you agree that there's a legitimate reason to prohibit that, right?
Well, you don't own the air, right? You don't own.
No, but the community does.
Sure.
Right. So,
yeah. So what I'm saying is that trees are real property. They're considered real property. That's a venerable concept in law, and they're owned by the landowner.
And
I would distinguish them from other types of property, like possibly air.
Okay. All right. So Robert is on the line. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. I think there's a problem in your logic. There's nothing in the federal constitution or federal laws which prohibits cities from acting independently as such. I give you a number of examples. The city of Philadelphia has a city income tax. The city of New York has a city income tax. The city of New York has purchased lakes up in the Adirondack Mountains, which allow, and they prevent people from entering on those lakes. It goes on for a long, long period of examples. I think whatever the state constitution of Texas is, I'm not familiar with that, but as the idea of creating ideas or ideologies or concepts which suit some one group of people, and those same ideologies and concepts may not suit another group of people,
right,
is a subject of a lawsuit, not the subject of legislation.
Okay. All right. So, Bennett Sandlin, is there a remedy in court?
There can be if a city oversteps. You know, I said earlier in the program, there's probably...
If the city oversteps or the county or state?
If the city oversteps.
Okay.
For example, banking regulations, probably not best at local level. Certainly.
But the cities can't sue the state and say you're a step... Because we all recognize that the state has the authority, right?
The state has the authority to preempt cities. That's true. It doesn't make it right, though. I think the same concepts that, you know, Ronald Reagan said about states being better than the feds in some ways apply on issues locally. I think he would be very alarmed to see where conservatism has taken us with this idea that the state government is somehow the pinnacle of all government. I call it the Goldilocks form of government. The federal government is big and bad. Cities are small and bad. And somehow at the state house, they get it just right. Can't possibly be the case. I work there every 2 years, and they have no concept of what a tree means to San Antonio. It's just not in their wheelhouse. It's not what they know. And so we need to keep those separation of powers and keep it close to home where the mayor of San Antonio or the mayor of Windcrest knows best.
And so, Brian Matthew, do you think that it's up to the state voter in order to hold the state accountable if they feel like they've gone too far in these issues?
Well, again, state voters have a role, local voters have a role, cities have a role, courts have a role, the federal government has a role in all these different issues. We have an overlapping and interlocking system, and that's a good thing to protect people's liberties. I just want to respond briefly to the idea that the states are the pinnacle of, you know, governmental power. That's not really our position. We're not just for any old state preemption. We are for state actions that push back on cities that we think step on people's liberty interests. And as a part of that, basically what we're advocating is that states should do some sort of determination. They should, sort of similar to what I outlined in the Patel rationale, look to see, to have some sort of articulable interest, some sort of articulable rationale for why this ordinance or this regulation by a local government is beyond the pale. It's not just any old preemption. So I want to push back on this idea that we are for state supremacy for the sake of state supremacy.
There are some state laws, the recent texting while driving law that was passed in Austin. There's some states, some cities in Texas have laws that are much tougher than the one that the state passed. And now, are there ordinances going to be weakened, Bennett?
Not the way the current law passed. The current law sets a basement of no texting while driving. There are some cities that say it has to be completely hands-free, and that seems to work on a community-by-community basis. One portion of the special session call, though, is to make that state law supreme, and so we're not particularly thrilled with that aspect of the special session call.
And Brian Matthew, what's the judgment do y'all have? How do you decide that the state, what state rules are good and bad? You're saying looking at liberty, but I just think that liberty thing, whose liberty are you talking about?
Ultimately, it's the liberty of the individual. It's their property rights. And I just want to back up.
So the individual who owns property?
The individual who owns property. So there are three fundamental rights articulated in the U.S. Constitution, Texas Constitution, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. These are people's fundamental rights, and that is what we are trying to preserve. And to that end, governmental actions are legitimate. There is a valid governmental role in enforcing contracts, in protecting property rights, in providing for security for an area. But governments also have to be limited, because governments left unchecked have the potential for abuse and for corruption. We see this all around the world. We've seen this in our own history. They can abuse people's fundamental rights. They can step on those rights. And governments are not self-limiting. They have to be checked. Yes, there is a role at the ballot box, but there are also roles to be played through the separation of powers, the legislature, the judicial branch, the executive, and also multiple competing layers of government. And so we take advantage. We're a center for local governance. We take advantage of every avenue we have in getting local governments to stay in their lane. So basically, we work with local office holders to talk about the blessings of liberty, what are valid exercises of governmental power, what are perhaps invalid exercises of governmental power. But also, we work with state governments to say, hey, here are some problems where we think that cities are overstepping their bounds. And we also work with the courts. It's an interlocking system, and we take advantage of all of it because that's the political system that we have.
And so, Brian Matthew, what rights do cities have then?
Cities have rights to order, to provide order so that the citizens within them can flourish, that they can build lives with dignity. Where they start to over-regulate, where they start to tax people to the point where they are unable to build wealth, they are overstepping their roles. And again, the state has a valid function of oversight.
And Bennett Sandlin, where do you see city rights?
I agree that we have competing levels of government that need to work together, but I think city rights are the ability to regulate things that are unique to that community, anywhere from trees to zoning to police powers. Those are things that our friends in Austin have no conception of what's right for 1,215 different cities. They can't possibly know that. That's not a criticism of them. It's just reality. We could do away with mayors and just let the folks in Austin be the mayor of every community. I think it would be a disaster.
I don't think that's on the table.
Not yet.
Not yet. Do you see that actually as a possibility?
I hope not. I think we have a lot of friends at the state capitol that appreciate that they don't have to deal with those local issues. They have mayors that are elected and unelected on a routine basis to take care of those things.
And the key here is for folks, if they're not happy with what's happening at the state level, they can go vote. All right, I want to thank our guest, Brian Matthew, policy analyst at the Center for Local Governance at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Bennett Sandlin here, executive director for the Texas Municipal League. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.